Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Sipoga. This evening, we'll talk about climate change in Africa. And with us tonight is Ray Dichon. He's Vice President of Energy and Climate at the United Nations Foundation. He also serves as Executive Director of the Energy Future Coalition, a broad-based non-partisan public policy initiative focused on energy challenges like oil dependency, climate change, and global energy poverty. Welcome to the show, Mr. Dichon.
Thank you so much, Douglas.
You're
welcome. Glad to be on the show.
Thank you very much. We also have Richenda Van Leeuwen. She's Executive Director of Energy Access at the UN Foundation. Ms. Van Leeuwen leads the work of energy access at the United Nations. Good afternoon, Ms. Leeuwen.
Great to be with you.
Thank you very much. We also have Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban in South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the panelists.
Thank you very much. And joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Hussein Kiflo. Kiflo is an Ethiopian social and political commentator. He's a research assistant at the Southern Methodist University. Kiflo, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Douglas. And good afternoon or good evening, everybody, depending upon your time.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen and lady, as I said, nice. Our topic is climate change, especially in Africa. Let me start with Mr. Dichon. How seriously should an African take the issue of climate change?
Well, Douglas, it, of course, depends on the one's particular geography, but climate change is having already significant effects on Africa's weather and affecting, therefore, agricultural production. Sea level rise will be an issue in some parts of Africa. The impacts are being felt on the ground already, and they're being felt most acutely by the poorest of the poor, people who depend on subsistence agriculture to get by and who are seeing their livelihoods threatened by changes in rainfall and other weather patterns. So it's really a vital issue for the future of Africa as a both a barrier and potentially, eventually, an enabler of economic development.
I see. Ms. Van Leeuwen, some analysts have said no continent will be struck as severely by the impacts of climate change as Africa. Do you share that opinion?
Well, I think, as Reid has already mentioned, that certainly there's a vulnerability, particularly given that you have, certainly in my work in Africa, so many people are already amongst the most vulnerable across the world. More than 400 million people don't even have the benefits of power today. They lack electricity. They don't have the means to be able to really have the benefits of what we've taken for so long as modern development. So I think we have to look at people who are sort of doubly vulnerable. They're already vulnerable because they haven't got the infrastructure that they need, the access to the benefits to help them with education, with modern healthcare, with creating an income, and then they're doubly vulnerable, as Reid has already mentioned, because of the change in weather patterns, the vulnerability for agricultural production, and also we're seeing and we're hearing more about the existing disease burden that is changing. We've heard already malaria is crawling up the hills in different parts of Africa, and those effects are particularly felt, I would say, most acutely by those women and their children who are already working under an extreme burden of not having the benefits from modern development that we already see. And particularly, you know, it's focused on other areas as well in terms of just the time taken for getting water. You know, we're seeing water patterns changing as well as being able to use improved fuels for cooking. And there's a whole household burden that we're seeing that doesn't really get a whole lot of mention in the bigger scheme of things.
I see. Let me go to Kiflo in Texas. Giving the assessment from those two there, they paint a very bleak picture, but then Africa actually can't get to a better, can't develop without contributing to climate change, sort of. Is that a contradiction?
You know, Douglas, the way I see it, climate change impacts on Africa worse than other continents. The reason is it's not only climate, the effect of climate change that is really affecting Africa. It is the failure of government policies. If you take the case of my country, you know, there is this much vaunted economic double-digit economic growth, you know, the transformation, and but whenever, you know, when there is a slight change of climate change, immediately you would hear this terrible word called famine, or as the current regime put it, you know, food insecurity, which is a politically correct term, and which it's Western donors, its allies, are also using. But the way I see it, it is you know, government failures that causes serious problem with regard to climate change, such as famine and or food crisis.
Mm-hmm. I see. Suleiman.
Yes, I agree with my brother Kifu that much as the climate change is a natural phenomenon and we cannot stop it, but we have also to accept that we have got the man-made catastrophes by our African leaders or the leadership on the continent, because, number one, much of these phenomena are not new. Droughts are not new. Floods are not new. Desertification is not new. We are all aware. It's a couple of years the desert has been following. It is a couple of years the Lake Chad has been drying. But what have our leaders done? We have been grappling with the catastrophes of poverty, of food security, of unemployment for over a period of years. A lot of money has been pumped into the African continent by the international community to see whether we can alleviate them. But now, at the end of the day, we have been caught up by another catastrophe of climate change, when we have not even been able to push back the boundaries of poverty, the boundaries of food insecurity. We are still struggling. Apart from South Africa, for example, to be specific, apart from South Africa and Zambia in the South African region, the Southern African region, which has got enough food reserves, the other countries, you've got almost 27 million of people who are going to be affected by the food insecurity in Southern Africa on its own. So our governments have not done enough. So we are being caught up by the effects of climate change. We are not denying them, but we are saying that part of the problem is in Africa, in our governance systems on the continent itself.
Following up on that point, Mr. Deshon, given that some people have argued, how can Africa attain sustainable development and at the same time try to curb the impacts of climate change?
Well, that's a great question, Douglas. Thank you for asking that, because I think that the problems that we've heard from the previous speakers are true, except that the opportunity exists to, as the term has it, leapfrog, go bypass some of the conventional development steps that other countries have taken. Just as we have been able to use cell phones around the continent without building out the previous infrastructure of landlines, we think that there's a great opportunity to bring energy opportunities and therefore economic opportunities to people who are now not served by energy, and to do it in a clean and sustainable way with modern renewable energy technologies, which are increasingly affordable and often the best choice to actually deliver power to people there. So I think that countries in Africa should not be constrained about how they develop. That's up to them to make those decisions. And it's generally been recognized that achieving universal energy access across the continent will have a relatively small effect on global warming. But as the development occurs and grows with productive uses, industrialization, et cetera, we want to see that in a sustainable way. And we think that the technology is coming along just in the right time and fashion to make that possible without recreating the problems of the past. I would just mention in that respect that we've been inspired in this work by Candy Yamkela from Sierra Leone, who was at UNIDO and then more recently the CEO of Sustainable Energy for All, a UN initiative. And under his leadership, a new group of African energy leaders has been created that will specifically look at this combination of both the need to deliver universal energy access and the social and economic opportunity of doing it the right way with clean and sustainable technologies.
And I'd just like to add in there as well that one of the exciting things that we're seeing is, in fact, that the opportunity is there, and we are hearing from Bloomberg New Energy Finance that last year, in fact, the uptake of renewable energy technologies in developing countries in terms of investments was almost at the same level as it was in developed countries. And so we're seeing that these technologies are really being adopted and taken on board by developing countries. And across sub-Saharan Africa, we are seeing now, both in terms of the off-grid piece that Reid had mentioned, really bringing the benefits of modern power systems to vulnerable communities, but also in terms of integrating more renewable energy into their existing grids to help strengthen that and really get away from a dependence on, in part, hydropower, where that has intense seasonality, and we've been seeing a lot of issues in recent months across much of West Africa and Ghana and other countries where, in fact, there have been a lot of challenges with their power structure because of a heavy dependence on one particular type of energy generation technology. And really looking at not only strengthening the infrastructure and bringing on as much renewables as possible, but also with a greater adoption of energy efficiency as well, which is not just around reducing your carbon intensity and CO2 reductions for developed countries, but we're seeing now the opportunity, as Reid again had mentioned, with leapfrogging, with being able to do things in a really smart way without having to use as much energy as we would in the past. I mean, now we have a 15-watt, very high-quality LED television that just does not have the same draw on a power grid that older technologies used to have. And so we're seeing now that with energy efficiency in many different areas that we can still provide the same value and the same service, not only across Africa, but in other parts of the world as well, without the sort of the negativity of what we went through in developed countries of getting there in terms of lifestyle improvements.
I see. Kifulu, that lady there talks about a lot about energy efficiency, and there's some improvement. But for people who know Africa, this only is happening in urban centers, in cities and towns. And most of the population are in rural areas. Some of them have never seen an electric bulb or light. So how long is it going to take to spread to the rural areas?
Yes, you're right, Douglas. All these things we talk about, energy efficiency, it's only a few people who live in the urban center who can benefit from that. Unfortunately, even that has changed, particularly in my country. Now, we have heard how the Ethiopian regime is constructing this power generating dams. Even these power generating dams, some of them are going dry. And I think the way I see it, even though I'm a layman when it comes to this business, but I think it can be foreseen. But the regime cannot even foresee this and be prepared for this kind of eventuality. So the dams are drying, And now, even in the capital city, where you also find the seat of African Union, electric power is being rationed most of the time. Addis Ababa is in a blackout, and people are also dying of they call it malnutrition or food insecurity, like I said. But they are dying of famine, and this government, while it's stretching its hand for begging bowl, they don't want to use the word famine. They don't want to tell it like it is, and so I think that is part of the problem. The policy failure stems from excluding the very people who can make a change in their own life. In Ethiopia, if you don't know, in Ethiopia, no Ethiopian cannot own land. The government controls land. It deliberately keeps the Ethiopian farmer in economic bondage.
Mm-hmm.
To control them. That is what causes this recurring famine.
I see. Let me let Ms. Richenda Van Leeuwen respond. Then I'll go to Mr. Deshon to talk about the aspect of the policies, government policies in Africa, whether they can help in mitigating climate change. Let me first begin with Ms. Van Leeuwen.
Well, thank you very much. One of the things that I work on is really helping to bring energy access to the communities, and we're not looking at in villages. First of all, you mentioned about people who don't even have a light bulb. We're seeing now that through the use of small-scale renewable energy technologies put in the hands of the consumers themselves, using the best of mobile phone technologies in Kenya, using M-Pesa for mobile money, so that people can make payments on these systems according to what they can afford. In fact, we're really beginning to see a sea change in being able to bring the benefits of power and electricity to communities, that, including in Ethiopia, that in the past did not have that. There's a lot of really great companies out there across East Africa and West Africa that are embracing these technologies and really being able to bring these benefits. And not only in terms of household use, but we're really looking also at, we've been talking a little bit about agriculture. A lot of food that is produced is wasted post-harvest because people can't get it to the market in time. We're seeing the adoption now of improvements in refrigeration, also in terms of being able to use mobile phones for helping to know what the market is doing, and really being able to adapt some of the technologies that we have to help improve the experience of farmers who can get their goods to market. So what we're trying to say is, and certainly, we know that there are immense challenges, but we are seeing some changes now, particularly through bringing energy access to these rural areas that in the past were not able to benefit.
Mr. Deshon?
Well, I think that Richenda makes a very good point about how we bring economic development in Africa to rural areas and not just focus on the cities. I think that energy for productive uses in rural areas that might include refrigeration of crops, as Richenda mentioned, but it's also an opportunity to create a small business around a highly efficient television, to use electricity to pump water for irrigation. There are any number of ways that it can spur economic development. But in the urban areas, I would just point out, as has been mentioned earlier, that the electricity often is not reliable in the current system. And having some of these decentralized systems and also using mobile phone technology to enable people to pay in advance and assure themselves of access to energy is really transforming the way we can think about delivering electricity even in the urban and peri-urban areas. So I think that what we're hearing today, Douglas, is that climate change is a huge threat to Africa in worsening food insecurity and creating other problems. But the response to that does not have to be conventional energy generation that worsens climate change. It can be some of these new technologies that are clean and sustainable and that deliver a better outcome for the citizens.
I see. Well, for those just joining us now, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Our topic tonight is climate change in Africa. Our panelists are Reid Dechon and Richenda Van Laun from the United Nations Foundation, Hussein Kiflo, a social and political commentator, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Let me go to Suleiman. We've heard the experts, what they're saying, but can all this happen without the involvement and able and efficient and good government policies from governments across the continent, some of whom or many of whom are not democratic even?
Not at all, Douglas. That is the problem which we have all along, especially on the African continent. There is a disconnect between what is happening on the ground and the ideal life which our experts talk about in the boardrooms, in the United Nations, in Paris, in the COP21 conference. Those ones, they don't seem to understand what is happening on the ground. On the ground, we lack the leadership. The continent, apart from the few countries, we don't have the political will, we don't have the political capacity to implement all these ideal new technologies which are available at the moment. For example, recently, the Ugandan government, one of the governments which is the favorites of the West African, of the West, of the developed countries as one of the good governments, it bought fighter jets worth $700 million. How much could it have been if that money had been pumped into renewable energy? How much would it have been if that money had been pumped into alleviation of poverty? You'll find people don't even have bandages to use in hospitals, but the government goes and buys fighter jets.
I see.
They don't even have. So what we are saying is that there is a disconnect between the ideal life which is expected in Africa. All these ones, all these new technologies, we don't refuse. They are very good, and they can alleviate poverty. They can stimulate economic growth and development on the continent only if we had the proper leadership. As you said, democratic, transparent, and inclusive government where the citizens, where all the citizens of the country are involved in involvement, intellectuals and non-intellectuals, where everybody is carried on. Then you will have all these new technologies helping. Otherwise, the current state of the political environment on the continent does not allow any of those ideal technologies, all those ideal solutions which are being suggested by the experts.
Ms. Richenda Van Leon, what's the experience dealing with African governments in as far as putting in place policies and carrying out with the things that can make climate change not a problem?
Thank you very much. I mean, we work with governments, and certainly I don't disagree that there are challenges. Capacities are different in different countries. But I would paint a slightly less bleak picture in that I'm not talking about ideal technologies. I'm talking about technologies and solutions that are being implemented today. We're seeing a sea change. I've just been in Tanzania last month, and I travel a lot across Africa, and really we are seeing uptake in Tanzania alone of this these decentralized renewable energy solutions in the tens of thousands on a monthly basis. And sometimes this is enabled by entrepreneurs who are able to operate outside of government channels. So they don't have to necessarily work directly with the local utility. They're able to set up, particularly when you're looking at small-scale renewable energy solutions, without a great deal of government oversight, and not in every country, but in many countries. And that has actually enabled a more entrepreneurial approach that is not sort of heavily bureaucratized. Mm-hmm. Clearly, though, when you get to the larger scale solutions, including things like independent power producers, mini grids at community levels, then there is much more of a need to navigate government policy. But there are some interesting changes afoot. In Kenya, for example, in the past, it was always the national utility that had to be approving the way that any kind of power producer operated in the country. In the last couple of years, that shifted to the county level. So, in fact, we are seeing that there is more entrepreneurial engagement because it doesn't require central government approval for every decision now, that there has been local opportunities to which are much more closer to the communities themselves that are affected, to be able to make that decision around approving a particular solution for those communities. So definitely there are many challenges to overcome, but there are ways to operate. And we are seeing change happen. There is a 7.5 megawatt solar PV plant, the first in Rwanda, that is tied to the national grid there, that was produced by a group called Gigawatt Global and completed in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. We are seeing large-scale transactions also coming to financial close. Again, it's taken time, and certainly there are ways that on the policy side that we could be reducing those barriers further and faster, but we are seeing that change beginning to happen. And I just like to end by saying that there is an area and a system where we need much stronger engagement and leadership, and that is particularly around health system strengthening.
See.
We see today that there are still way too many health clinics serving rural populations and even peri-urban populations that do not have any access to electricity. And if we're really serious about helping to reduce the vulnerability of communities to the effects of climate change, as well as just delivering modern healthcare services, that is an area where we really do need to see more government leadership in terms of making it a priority for their own citizens and their health systems to ensure that, in fact, we can provide the power so that health clinics can operate after dark, that women don't have to deliver with a candle being held by the midwife to guide the baby out, and that we can ensure that, in fact, we are able to provide those solutions.
I see. We are running out of time. I would have asked Mr. Dichon about the extractive industry. But in conclusion, where do you see the continent going in the near future as far as climate change is concerned?
Douglas, thank you for asking. I think that the picture Richenda is painting is a sea change in the opportunity for Africa and other developing countries. What she's describing is a decentralization of the energy system. We heard earlier on the call the concern about hundreds of millions of dollars having to be committed by governments with all the problems that might go with that to big, large-scale power generation. And some of that may still have to continue. I don't want to mislead anybody. But what's really exciting is seeing these entrepreneurs, companies who can raise money from the private sector going out and doing energy services as a business that only requires the least amount of government involvement. In fact, often the less the better. If there's anything that African leaders could do that would be the most important, it would be to create the right kind of financial, regulatory, legal environment for these businesses to operate.
Yes.
And be able to bring money from investors around the world to deploy these services.
All right. I think we've run out of time. That wraps up the edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Richenda Van Leeuwen, Executive Director of Energy Access at the UN Foundation, Ray Dechon, Vice President of Energy and Climate at the UN Foundation, Hussein Kifula, an Ethiopian social and political commentator, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen and ladies, thanks so much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Our producer was Jackson Mvunganya, and our engineer tonight was Nelson Lopez. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. If you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.